For tuning in, we bring you Democracy Now, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. without commercial interruption, thanks to listeners just like you. Consider becoming a sustaining member, a BAI buddy, a first-time subscriber, or a major donor by calling our pledge line right now at 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Make a contribution of any amount. Do what you can in support of WBAI. Well, it's 9 o'clock here in New York City at WBAI's 99.5 FM. We would usually be bringing you Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. The program is off this week and we'll be back next week with a brand new show. But right now, we have an encore presentation of Democracy Now with Stephen Thrasher. And we hope that you will stay tuned and make a contribution in support of WBAI.
New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's been very frustrating seeing how many people are waiting for monkeypox vaccines. They don't get them, then they become positive with monkeypox and they have to suffer and often pay a huge price economically. And a lot of this is just because we as a society are allowing corporations to hold on to profit as a much more important thing than saving lives and protecting lives.
As New York, California, and Illinois declare health emergencies over the outbreak of monkeypox, we spend the hour with Stephen Thrasher, author of the new book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide.
A framework of a viral underclass, I hope, will help people to understand why it is that the same kinds of people keep coming into the past and being affected by very different kinds of viruses.
We'll talk about monkeypox, the COVID pandemic, HIV/AIDS, and more. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
President Joe Biden has named top officials from FEMA, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to coordinate the White House response to the monkeypox outbreak here in the United States, where the virus has been reported in 47 states and in Washington, D.C. New York, California, Illinois have become the first states to declare health emergencies over the rapid spread of monkeypox. New York City has also declared a public health emergency after officials described the city as the epicenter of the outbreak, with tens of thousands of people vulnerable to exposure. Worldwide, over 23,000 infections have been detected in at least 80 countries, with the United States leading confirmed cases, about a quarter of them. Though health experts believe many more monkeypox cases have gone undiagnosed due to shortages of testing. For more, we're joined by Stephen Thrasher, LGBTQ scholar, professor at McGill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and faculty member of Northwestern's Institute of Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-Being. His new book is titled The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. Stephen Thrasher, welcome back to Democracy Now! Congratulations on the release of this extremely important book, especially at this time. You wrote a piece for Scientific American headlined, "Blaming Gay Men for Monkeypox Will Harm Everyone." Talk about why this is so important and what we should understand about the state of monkeypox in the United States and around the world now.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I wrote that piece. I started writing it in the end of May, and like many people I'm in conversation with, we were extremely concerned about the way that monkeypox was moving around the world and how we were starting to see cases in the United States. And so at the time, I was making the case to the Biden administration, to the national government, that we really needed to proactively go ahead and start vaccinating men who have sex with men, particularly considering that we were coming into Pride Month. There were multiple opportunities all through June, beginning where I live normally in Chicago with the International Mr. Leather Festival, and there are going to be Pride events all through the month. And we really needed to take that opportunity to vaccinate people because we could see where the outbreak was happening. That did not happen, as the New York Times reported last week, really enragingly. The Biden administration had the option to purchase 300,000 doses of this new vaccine that works quite well and is easy to administer, but kind of took away the approach. And so that's why we're seeing this unfolding disaster now. And this is a difficult thing to think about and parse, but it's really important that we think about it and drill down on it, that this disease is one that in theory can affect anyone, but it has worked its way particularly into communities of men who have sex with men. And there are reasons why I think that it's important to think of it as a sexually transmitted infection. Like other viruses, HIV, hepatitis, herpes, HPV, STIs can move in a variety of ways, but this one is really moving sexually right now. And I had started looking into last week a couple of different research papers. One was out of London, which showed 196 of 197 cases were from men who have sex with men. That is new information that we didn't quite understand in a lot of countries in Europe and North America. But also, as NPR was reporting earlier this week, based on a research paper I had also recently read, there's a man, Dr. Aguena, in Nigeria, who had looked at an outbreak and studied an outbreak in 2017. And in 2019, he started publishing research saying he had reason to think that this virus was moving through genital secretions. So we have on our hand a situation that has taken a turn. This virus has changed. A lot of people's reference around monkeypox is thinking of it primarily coming off of close contact with animals and close contact with other people, but it seems to have changed in a way that it's particularly moving through sexual contact between men who have sex with men. This does not mean that it's a gay disease and shouldn't be stigmatized that way, but we shouldn't be ashamed to think about who it is affecting and how it is affecting people and to deal with it with a great sense of urgency, not with panic, but with a real sense of urgency right now.
And Stephen Thrasher, in your book, you break your book up into 12 chapters that look at 12 factors that create the conditions for unequal viral transmission. And some of the chapters, what on racism, on individualized shame, on capitalism. Could you talk about why you structured the book that way, and especially the chapter on individualized shame?
Certainly. So I've seen over my time of reporting on viruses as a journalist and studying them as a scholar that the same kinds of people are coming into harm's way. And it's been alarming sometimes when you look at how different than the viruses are. So I'd seen for years in reporting on the criminalization of HIV and on the killing of black people by police officers and black poverty that you kind of see the same maps. HIV is happening in the places where police violence happens a lot. And then when the COVID-19 pandemic began to break out, I started seeing the same maps, both in St. Louis, where I've been doing research, and also in New York City. And that seems strange to me because HIV and SARS-CoV-2 are extremely different viruses. They move differently. They have very different virological components to them, but they were happening in the same places. And that's because there are all these social determinants of health that place people in the path of viruses and also make their bodies less likely to be able to defend them. Even when we look at something like with COVID-19, it's primarily killing people who are elderly. People who are in nursing homes that are in poor areas are much more likely to die. And so we're seeing something similar again now with monkeypox, that it's happening to not only men who have sex with men in the United States, but as the Washington Post reported last week, about two-thirds of the cases are happening towards black and brown people. And certainly anecdotally, I haven't seen good research on this now, but certainly anecdotally, white people and professionals like myself who have time on their hands have been able to get vaccines. And if we don't deal with that, then we're going to see upper class people getting access to the monkeypox vaccine while poor people, black and brown people, get less access to it. And with LGBT people, something that I think can help viewers understand why it's the social determinants. You know, we know that there's some kind of sexual transmission component with something like HIV or monkeypox. But with COVID, LGBTQ people were more likely to get sick, more likely to die of COVID. And that's not because there's any sort of sexual component to COVID. It's because LGBTQ people are structurally lower class. We're poor. We're more likely to lose our jobs. We're less likely to have salary jobs. We're less likely to have health insurance. And so all of those things make our bodies vulnerable in such a way that viruses have an easier time getting into them. Particularly anti-trans laws and anti-trans practices make it difficult for people who are trans to get the health care that they need in general and the health care they need around viruses specifically much more difficult. And then we become a much easier point of entry and reproduction for viruses.
And you also write about the role of borders, because obviously viruses do not respect borders of nations. And could you talk about that as well? And I think we have got about a minute or so.
Sure. So borders themselves create a kind of violence. And when we try to keep people inside of a nation or inside a gender identity, we put up a very strong wall. In the United States, one of the biggest parts of our viral history is that at Guantanamo Bay, it was not founded for 9/11, referring to your stories earlier from day. It was actually founded 10 years before that when the first Bush administration tried to keep Haitians from coming into the country. And they set up this infinite detention camp in Cuba at Guantanamo Bay. And they tested everyone for HIV and they sterilized everybody who was positive for HIV. And so we imagine that the U.S. has no viruses in it, that they're somewhere else. But with monkeypox and COVID, we are the leading country in the world with these infections. And so it's not a matter of keeping them out. It's a matter of dealing with them inside the borders of our own country and working with other countries to lower transmission.
Not a single vaccine has made it to Africa.
That's certainly my understanding. I know that none had made it to Nigeria, where Dr. Ogoina had done this really amazing work. And if we had dealt with these countries and helped them earlier, we would not be dealing with this global pandemic now.
That was Stephen Thrasher, LGBTQ scholar, professor at the McGill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, faculty member of Northwestern's Institute of Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-Being. His new book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. We'll return to the interview in a minute. But I first want to urge you to call 212-209-2950 and become a BAI buddy. You could pledge $15 a month or $20 a month, $25 a month. What a difference it would make to BAI to cover its costs. That's all. I mean, independent media is essential to the functioning of a democratic society. Now, if you'd like to get a copy of Professor Stephen Thrasher's book, pledge $100 and it'll go directly to WBAI. The book is The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. It is a fantastic book. We urge you to call right now. $100 contribution. Please make that call. Make it now. Make it possible for WBAI to happen. $100 contribution. Now you can become a BAI buddy for 15 or more. We urge you to call. We cannot do this without you, only with you. You can also go online at WBAI.org and click on buddy and you can make your pledge right there. But do it now. I want to go back to Stephen Thrasher. I mean, that's why we do Democracy Now, is to provide a platform for people to speak for themselves, provide a platform for debate and discussion about the most important issues of the day. Please call. I wanted to quote Linda Villarosa, who wrote Under the Skin and writes for the New York Times bestselling 1619 Project. She said, in the viral underclass, through a combination of broad and deep reporting and narrative storytelling, Stephen Thrasher examines the ways HIV, AIDS, and other viruses strike people and communities with deliberate intention. His book is essential reading for our current moment and a signpost for understanding epidemics to come. We are just talking in this first part of the conversation about monkeypox and going a bit broader. In the second part of the conversation, we're going to really dig deeply into his book, and we want to get to that conversation. So please call. $100 contribution gets you his book, just out, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. Another person who really highly recommends this book is Naomi Klein. She says, at once precise and sweeping, rigorous and inviting, The Viral Underclass fearlessly crosses the policed borders of academic disciplines and literary forms, creating an irresistibly readable and humane exploration of the barbarities of class. Through the sheer force of his storytelling, Thrasher challenges us to abandon our fatal illusions of separateness in favor of an embrace of our place in a collective entanglement of bodies. Readers are gifted that most precious of things in these muddled times, a clear lens through which to see the world. Those the words of Naomi Klein, the best-selling author of This Changes Everything and so many other books, talking about Stephen Thrasher's book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. It's yours for a $100 contribution. Please make your call. That number again, 212-209-2950, or go to WBAI.org. But do it now. From the preeminent LGBTQ scholar, social critic, journalist Stephen Thrasher comes a powerful and crucial exploration of one of the most pressing issues of our time, how viruses expose the fault lines of society. We know it well from COVID, who lives and who dies. We urge you to call, whether in this country or in this country as a microcosm of what's happened in the world. We ask you to stand up for independent media. WBAI.org is the place to go online to make your pledge. $100 contribution, you'll get the hardcover, new, just out, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide by Stephen Thrasher. I want to go back to the interview. Please make your call. Make it now. We cannot do this work without you, only with you. Keyes Lehman, who wrote the book Heavy, and winner of an Andrew Carnegie Medal, wrote The Viral Underclass marks the beginning of a new epoch in cultural work. 212-209-2950. Or Robert Jones, who wrote The Prophets, says, I fully expected to encounter rigorous research and a full accounting of the relevant history in Dr. Stephen Thrasher's Viral Underclass. But what excited me and kept me rapt the entire time was the astonishing level of craft and the depth of compassion with which the book was written. More than just set of facts, Dr. Thrasher illustrates truths, all of which implore us to live by the grandest, most liberating of all principles, love. The Viral Underclass is journalism and journey, science and sermon, astute articulation of grievance and pathway to healing. It's vital reading. 212-209-2950. It's the lifeline of WBAI. 212-209-2950. Please make your call. Make it now. You can become a BAI buddy, $15 or more. Make that pledge online at WBAI.org or by calling 212-209-2950. Let me go to just one page of the book. In Stephen Thrasher's chapter, which is called An Invitation, a viral underclass is produced through 12 major related social vectors that enable the relationship between viruses and marginalization. Sometimes these vectors produce the material conditions for unequal viral transmission. Sometimes they turn the presence of viruses into discrimination or economic ruin, leading to compounding harms. These social vectors are racism, individualized shame, capitalism, the law, austerity, borders, the liberal carceral state, unequal prophylaxis, ableism, speciesism, the myth of white immunity, 12 collective punishment. That was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He just lays it out. And we're asking you to lay it out for WBAI, to be there for WBAI radio. Maybe you live in Staten Island, or perhaps you live in Queens. Maybe you live in Jackson Heights. We're asking you to call in now. Queens Village, or perhaps in Long Beach or Flatbush in Brooklyn or Jamaica or Jamaica Estates. Maybe you go to Brooklyn College. Maybe you go to Medgar Evers. Maybe go to Hunter. Maybe go to City University of New York or State University of New York or NYU or Columbia. We're urging you to call in now, or part of the staff or one of the professors, or maybe you make sure to maintain the buildings so the kids can learn and the teachers can teach. We urge you to go to the phone right now and let us know you are there. We are all community. And if you appreciate this university of the airwaves, that is WBAI, that you can enroll in for free. You do not have to pay a penny. But we're asking you, please invest in WBAI so that someone who really can't afford to pledge, you're keeping it alive for them as well. And maybe that's you, so keep listening. But if it isn't, you can do your part. Please, $5 a month, $10 a month. Could you do $15 a month and be a BAI buddy? Your call makes the difference. If you could pledge $100, one-shot deal, you get the viral underclass by Professor Stephen Thrasher at McGill University, at the McGill School of Journalism at Northwestern University in Chicago. We urge you to call 212-209-2950. I want to go back to the interview. So you can keep calling during the interview. We have to break less to ask for your support. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Or just pledge at WBAI.org. But do it for WBAI. This remarkable place founded in 1960, part of the Pacifica Radio Network, which was founded in 1949 by Lew Hill, a war resister. When he came out of the detention camp, said there's got to be a media outlet run not by corporations that profit from war, but by journalists and artists. And that's how Pacifica was born. First, KPFA in Berkeley. Second, KPFK in Los Angeles. Third, our station, WBAI, right here in New York. And then there's WPFW in Washington. There's KPFT in Houston. KPFT went on the air in 1970, 10 years after WBAI, and within weeks was blown up by the Ku Klux Klan. And when they got the transmitter back on its feet, they blew it up again. There's a reason for that. Because they knew people speaking for themselves and the community hearing that will break down bigotry, caricatures, and stereotypes. And that's what these hate groups thrive on. We ask you to call right now. Ensure WBAI's future. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Or go to WBAI.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Let's go back to our conversation with Stephen Thrasher, author of the new book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide.
A framework of a viral underclass, I hope, will help people to understand why it is that the same kinds of people keep coming into the paths and being affected by very different kinds of viruses. And this is something that happens all over the world, but particularly a dynamic that we see here in the United States. Also, why is it that becoming infected with a virus and harmed by it also moves people down class, is such an economic catastrophe for people here in the United States? And so this book began really with reporting I started for BuzzFeed more than 8 years ago now, with the story of a young man named Michael Johnson. He was known online with his Grindr handle and some social media by the name Tiger Mandingo. And he was a wrestler at a college in Missouri in 2013. And he was accused of transmitting HIV to several people he had had sex with, mostly who were white men. And I had no idea at the time that HIV transmission could be something that was criminally prosecuted. I didn't know how that worked. And I had an editor who had written about and edited about AIDS for years. And he said, you know, I think you should go investigate this, this person is facing life in prison. It's being treated like a murder. And so the initial coverage of that case was extremely sensational, and he was treated, it was written about all over the world as if this one college wrestler was causing HIV around the world. There are 40 million people living with HIV around the globe, and so kind of heaping upon one person didn't quite make sense. And so as I dug into his story, I found that there was kind of every disaster of Black America, every disaster of gay America in one story, that this young man was really being used as a scapegoat for all the anxieties about the ways that HIV moves. And he was eventually sentenced to 30 years in prison, and in part because of my reporting and a lot of activism people did, he got out after about 6 years. But in that time, I learned that there are all these ways that treating HIV criminally doesn't work. It makes people less likely to get tested and increases stigma. And he was someone I would say like really fits into something that we might think of as a viral underclass, the people who are likely to become infected by viruses. But once they are, they're punished by the law. They're punished economically. And so I kind of started from that case to think about a framework of a viral underclass, a term Sean Strube, an HIV activist, originally coined. And I used it to kind of think about why is it that, you know, these same people are being affected by viruses. Sometimes they're very different, like COVID, monkeypox, and it's the same people. But also, it just does some harm, so much harm in the United States economically. So, for example, some of us have seen a story in the news about a person who was diagnosed with monkeypox, and their doctor told them that they had to quarantine for a month, and they broke down crying. I have a friend of a friend who's a bartender who was also told he had to quarantine for a month, and so, you know, we're crowdfunding to try to get the money. And this is a real problem, that the United States will say, you have this virus, now you cannot work for a month, which of course will throw people off a cliff economically. And so a viral underclass, I hope, will help us see why it is that the transmission's happening, but also the ways that great harm happens. And it doesn't have to be that way. Viruses are really great teachers in showing us that we're interconnected, our destinies are interconnected, and so we need to deal with these things, you know, societally and in a group. But so often, particularly in the United States, we push all the responsibility onto the person who becomes infected and treat them like they've done something wrong, even when, you know, there's a virus like SARS-CoV-2 that's affecting billions of people. We still try to frame it as you did something wrong by yourself, and therefore you're going to be punished in a class way.
And Steve, you wrote in a recent article for Prism that, quote, more people are dying of COVID under Biden than Trump, and it didn't have to be this way. Could you expand on that?
It's been really frustrating to see how the Biden administration has mismanaged this pandemic. And of course, the Trump administration and Trump himself personally were sort of cartoons of how badly one could manage a pandemic. But the Biden administration, in one sense, just carries on a lot of American traditions. And as I write about in my book, these engines that drive viral transmission in the United States cross party lines. Incarceration is a huge major one. You know, that people are coming in and out of jails constantly is one of the reasons why I think we have such high rates of disease like COVID-19 in this country. But Biden himself has done a lot of, has made a lot of, I think, really bad choices. One is having COVID himself right now. I don't know if he's tested out of being positive or not now, but he's really driving that you have to get up and get back to work, which is not the thing that we want people to be doing, particularly with the risk that creates for long COVID. But also his budget priorities don't reflect any seriousness about ending this pandemic. And I was just reading a tweet from a colleague last night pointing out that Biden did at one point say he was going to hire 100,000 healthcare workers in the United States. Never happened. Those people, you know, didn't come together. What he was trying to do when he got felled by COVID himself was ask for funding for 100,000 more cops. So he moved from 100,000 healthcare workers to 100,000 cops. And that's a really good analogy of where our budget priorities are in this country. The Biden and the Democrats have failed to pass the last $15 billion bill that they said they wanted to pass to get COVID-19 relief to people. And because they failed to do so, people who are uninsured are no longer able to get free testing or treatment at the point of service. And that's a huge driver of the pandemic. Those people are the most likely, research has been quite clear, on becoming infected with COVID, becoming seriously sick from it, and dying from it. And so we've just economically abandoned them and told them that they're on their own. At the same time, the Biden administration has spent tens of billions on Ukraine. He was just asking for $37 billion for 100,000 more cops. And I write my book about kind of an analogy at a smaller scale about how that plays out. When George Floyd was killed, many people don't remember this, or maybe they never knew in the first place, that an autopsy was done and he was diagnosed with the novel coronavirus. And so had he survived his encounter with the police, maybe he would have gotten very sick or died from COVID. But I thought a lot, and I wrote about this at the time, what were the funding priorities of the city of Minneapolis? And Minneapolis spends about a third of its budget on police, far more than they spend on any kind of social welfare or housing or anything like that. And Floyd was one of the 40 million people in the United States who lost his job initially because of COVID-19. And so I think a lot about what if a city like Minneapolis, with a Democratic mayor, Democratic city council, state has a Democratic governor, you know, what if they had spent money on housing and social welfare at that time? Someone like George Floyd might never have been in that store. He may never encountered the cops. He might still be alive. And if they had, you know, done things to get people the care and housing they needed, he might not also have COVID. But because of the way that we spend our money in this country, we create situations where people are likely to become infected by viruses and harmed by infectious disease at the expense of spending money for cops. And cops, at the end of the day, for all the other problems with them, simply cannot provide health care or prevent transmission. They actually increase transmission by arresting more people and putting them in jails and helping infectious diseases move more in communities.
We're talking to Stephen Thrasher. His new book just out, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. I wanted to ask you to talk about some of the people. You talk about them as patient zeros. And also, as you speak, we are showing some of the images of the great illustrator, the artist Molly Crabapple, who shares these images in your book.
Well, actually, thank you. And yeah, Molly's artwork is amazing. I actually I encourage people not to use the phrase patient zero, even though it has been ascribed to people, because it's very dehumanizing. And the excerpt that we had in The Atlantic, I kind of run through how I think patient zero ties into, going back to your statement today on 9/11, I think it actually builds upon ground zero. It creates the sense of an idea that people are a nuclear bomb or there's some kind of threat that is harming others. But it's a phrase that's been used towards originally a man named Gaetan Dugas, who was a French-Canadian flight attendant and was unfairly blamed for bringing the HIV virus into North America. And as Richard McKay and others have pointed out, and really good biological evidence has been shown as well, HIV had been circulating long before that. Dugas was very unfairly blamed, and it was totally a mistake. He was being interviewed by people researching what became HIV, and the researcher was primarily working in California, and he labeled this person as being outside of California. It was the letter O. It was a complete accident and mistake that it got thought to be a zero. But often we think of these people who are unfairly, you know, said, you bring a disease into a community, the community is imagined to be pure, and it's very ableist idea and very eugenic idea that viruses aren't circulating. And so harm is really, and responsibility is put on these people. So I write about him in the book. I write a little bit about Robert Rayford, who was a black teenager who died in the late 1960s in Missouri. And he probably died of AIDS. His death was so unusual that samples were kept and they were tested later. And he tested positive for HIV antibodies. And then I also write about a friend of mine, an actor named Olivier, who I loved very much, who was a really wonderful person and I didn't know how much he had had to live with HIV as a secret until after he died. And so I think in the book, and particularly around when we talk about someone as a patient zero, how we're putting all this responsibility of what is a social virus in a social process. Viruses don't magically show up in people like storks. They're, you know, moving between us, and we have to negotiate them. But we will often say, this person brought it in, and therefore we're going to just think about how to blame them. And we see it so unfairly in news media. I break down in the book as well the really ridiculous experience of seeing news stories on reputable news organizations, CNN, ABC News, places like that, about COVID parties and saying young people are having COVID parties. They're deliberately getting each other sick. It didn't happen. It's been totally debunked. The news organizations didn't apologize or track their stories. But that kind of framework is really popular. And I often teach, actually, in my classes, Amy, I often show the video that you narrate that Al Jazeera did, breaking down Chomsky and Herman's manufacturing consent. And the idea of a patient zero is a really helpful tool in that, and saying there's one common enemy, we can blame this person for this process that is societal, but it's much easier for news media and government to say we can just blame this one individual rather than deal with the complicated but important work of dealing with how viruses transmit more broadly.
Steve, you mentioned previously ableism. Can you talk about, and you have it as one of the factors in the unequal virus transmission. Could you talk about that?
Certainly. Ableism for me has been one of my real learning edges over the course of the pandemic, and disability activists have given us really great ways to think about how to manage a pandemic and how to negotiate life, even in intimate ways, while also being very cognizant of health. But we often think that people who are sick are bad, and we're constantly conflating, certainly able-bodied people are, that being not sick is good and being sick is bad. And this crosses parties. Donald Trump did this. You know, when he got sick with COVID, he was really, really big on trying to show a bullish personality and show that he could get back into the saddle as quickly as possible. Joe Biden is doing exactly the same thing. He was unmasked in his photograph, you know, being taken by the White House staff photographer. He said he came back real quickly. He had a rebound or just a false negative. And he's really trying to say, you know, I'm a good person. I can beat this. And the framework of I can beat this. It happens in all kinds of health settings, particularly around cancer. But with viruses, we often imagine that the weak get viruses and are sick from them, and the strong are virtuous and survive them. And in the chapter of my book, where I deal with this the most, I write about two people who are dear to me. One is Alice Wong, the disability activist, who has a really great book called Year of the Tiger coming out. And Alice herself is recovering from a recent hospital trip, but has been a really, really great resource for me to understand the ways that ableism and the idea that people are disposable if they're not strong enough is a big part of our society. And I think we can see this with different kind of viruses. With HIV, gay people were considered weak and not quote-unquote manly enough to survive. Disabled people and elderly people living in congregate care settings at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic were already considered disposable enough that they should be out of sight. And so when they started dying, there was not as much concern about that as there was when it was the idea that, you know, the quote-unquote general population of workers could be affected. That's when the U.S. government gets more involved. And I also write in the chapter about a man who was very close to me. His name was Ward Harkavy. He was my editor at the Village Voice. And he had this really cartoonishly disastrous experience of going from a tooth infection to having to recover in a nursing home at the same time here in New York State when the Cuomo administration was sending people with COVID into nursing homes to recover. And that's where he got the coronavirus, and that's where he died. And I think in the book a lot about how Tish James had in, I think, 2021, early in the year, had a report showing that there were thousands of people who had died of COVID in nursing home that the Cuomo administration had tried to cover up. And it made very little, made very few waves in the media or in political action. But then when the report came out about Cuomo sexually harassing women, which of course should be a impeachable offense as well, that did get a lot of media attention. And I think that the reason that that one did and elderly people dying in nursing homes didn't is ableism, is that we will think that old people aren't contributing to the society. They're a quote unquote drain economically on resources, and therefore they don't get the kind of care they deserve. But I think that, you know, thousands, more than 10,000, I think, people dying in nursing homes having that covered up, that should be an impeachable offense for the governor of any state, particularly one who is so feted by the Democratic Party and media for being a leader on the COVID-19 pandemic.
Can you talk about Lorena Borjas and why she's so significant? We mentioned borders in the first segment, but if you can go more into migrants and disease and how often they are portrayed as the carriers of disease.
Yeah, Lorena was somebody I only met once years ago, but she was very close to a frequent guest of yours, Chase Strangio. And I remember Chase tweeting in those early days of the pandemic that she had died. That she was the first person in my outer social circle that had died. And I'm kind of getting goosebumps thinking about her. She was just such an extraordinary person. Lorena had immigrated from Mexico. She wanted to live as a trans woman. She had been sex trafficked. She been kept in really bad situations, and she had this extraordinary life, and she gave everything that she had back to her community. She lived in Jackson Heights, and at the time, I actually remember watching Democracy Now! Around these days, where Jackson Heights was the epicenter of the epicenter of that pandemic within New York. And Lorena lived in one of these zones where you saw lots of people who are immigrants, sex workers, and people who had gotten out of jail. And Lorena was known for a few things. One was always having her cart. Everyone talks about how she would show up at the ACLU or where Chase was working or different places with stacks of papers of people who needed trans legal help. And she was one of the people that really made the connections between transgender people, the LGBT community, and migrants, and the ways that the criminal justice system particularly harms these communities in overlapping ways. And so she was very worried that trans people would get arrested under what colloquially is called the walking while trans law, that the NYPD will see trans people and assume that they're sex workers and lock them up. And of course, that is dangerous for all kinds of reasons. Police violence, trans women are often kept in jails for men, and so they're extremely vulnerable to sexual violence, which is harmful on its own, but it's also a mode of viral transmission. And of course, many of these women were also migrants, and so they were very vulnerable to the Obama administration's, I think it was called the Secure Communities Program, that was having the federal government go into local jails and find people on immigration violations and deport them. So Lorena really wanted to stop all of this violence before it began. She tried to keep people from getting arrested. But anytime any trans person would get arrested in New York City, Lorena was notorious for showing up at their bail hearing. She didn't even have to know the person. Anytime she heard them, she would gather up a bunch of other trans people, and they would go to the courthouse and say, "Your Honor, you know, this person is not alone. They have a community, and we're going to help them." And they would raise money to get them out of jail. They were not able to save everyone, of course, but they got many, many people out of jail in that way. And so Lorena got the COVID virus early on. She died early on. I think it was in March of 2020. And I found out a lot about her after she died, including that she had been living with HIV for decades. And even as she was herself in and out of the hospital those last few days of her life, she was still trying to raise bail money to get people out of Rikers, because she already recognized that Rikers was going to be one of these places where other people would get COVID-19. And Lorena tried to, you know, to navigate the borders of the United States of her own gender identity. She would give out sterile syringes to people on the streets. She would give out food and condoms to people on the streets. And so she did her part to really help stop viral transmission, hepatitis, HIV, things of that nature, by giving people the things that they needed. And I kind of end the book thinking about what it means when we lose someone like Lorena. You know, she was such a pillar of the trans Latinx community. AOC called her the mother of the trans Latinx community of Queens. And so I think about, you know, what does it mean when that pillar is lost? Because Lorena's not out there anymore giving out condoms and sterile syringes. And so that has an effect on viral transmission. And the people in her community see what happens to someone who really speaks up like her. You know, even she can't get the care that she needs. And so it's a huge loss for the people who knew and loved Lorena personally. Her Zoom funeral, which was the first one I went to, and it felt such a strange thing to go to a Zoom funeral back then, had about 400 people on the call. But she also, you know, her death has such a cascading effect on the community around it because she did so much for those around her. But it's been a joy, even though it's a really sad story, to hear the stories about Lorena. And anyone who knows her can tell people who didn't just the most wonderful tales about what a wonderful person she was.
Yeah, Steve, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about another chapter in your book and the factors for unequal viral transmission, and that is capitalism itself. Could you talk about that?
Well, capitalism is like the constant between different presidential administrations and different countries. And capitalism and austerity both play such a role in viral transmission. So when I was writing about Michael Johnson, and so much appropriately, reporting and thinking and research in the United States goes around racial disparities and looks at the long legacy of racial disparities going back through the Atlantic slave trade. But I actually had kind of an aha moment when I was doing research in Greece, and I was trying to be out of the United States and clear my head a little bit on a fellowship where I wrote about police violence, where a Greek activist was kicked to death by a mob that included several police officers. And police killings are quite rare in Greece when it had happened for 10 years. But I found out the person who was killed not that far from where I'd been working was an HIV positive activist named Zach Gastopoulos. He was gay. He did immigration work with as a volunteer. And there, in this completely different setting, I got to see how capitalism and austerity drive viral transmission. Greece had had, until 2008, 2009, really successful campaigns for reducing HIV transmission and hepatitis, both which are primarily driven there through injection drug use. They had really innovative and great and not particularly expensive programs to get sterile syringes to people on the street and outreach programs. And then when Greece had its economic crash, the European Union came in and enacted severe austerity on the state. And they cut all these programs, including the programs that that prevented HIV transmission. And within just, I think, 4 years, the rate of HIV had increased 3,000%. So capitalism, the way that it sort of extracts everything from every person and tries to optimize everything and enacts austerity and takes resources away from public health, is a driving force of how transmission happens. And at the other end, you know, we will get these amazing drugs around the world. ARVs, antiretrovirals for HIV, have saved millions of lives, but they were not even available in countries in Africa for the first 7 years after they were developed in the United States. Same thing with COVID-19 vaccines. There, you know, we've developed a bunch here in the United States. Many countries in the world don't have them. The U.S. is now actually in the opposite effect, the opposite position now with monkeypox, because we're waiting for the Jynneos vaccine, which I believe is developed in Norway but being produced in Bulgaria. And so we're waiting to get it from another country. And ideally, you know, anytime a laboratory or an institution creates something that can save lives, we should just share it and have everyone in the world make it so we can save as many lives as possible. But the need for capitalism and the need for profit means that people can wait months or years to get vaccines, and they pay for that with their lives at the worst end, or at least with, you know, with great pain. It's been very frustrating seeing how many people are waiting for monkeypox vaccines. They don't get them, then they become positive with monkeypox, and they have to suffer and often pay a huge price economically. And a lot of this is just because we as a society are allowing corporations to hold on to profit as a much more important thing than saving lives and protecting lives.
You've been listening to Stephen Thrasher. He is author of this remarkable book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. Yes, he is the inaugural Daniel H. Renberg Chair at Northwestern University's Medill School, the first journalism professorship in the world created to focus on LGBTQ research. Also a faculty member of Northwestern University's Institute for Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-being. His writings have been widely published in the New York Times, in the Guardian, the Atlantic, the Journal of American History, BuzzFeed, the Village Voice, Scientific American, a recipient of Ford and Sloan Foundation's grants. Dr. Thrasher holds a PhD in American Studies. We urge you to go to the phone right now. He was named one of the 100 most influential and impactful people of 2019 by Out Magazine for his research on HIV/AIDS. The Viral Underclass is his first book, and we're offering it to you for a $100 contribution. Please make your call. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Your call makes the difference. 212-209-2950. For a $100 contribution, you get brand new, just out, hardcover, The Viral Underclass: The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. Please make your call. Make it now. We cannot do this without you. Only together, only with you. Your call makes a difference. You can become a BAI buddy at $15 or more, or you could pledge $5 or $10 a month. That's $15 or more a month, a sustaining member to keep WBAI alive, forever imperiled, but so important, because we need independent media in a democratic society. We ask you to please make the call that makes the difference. There's a reason you're listening to WBAI.org or tuning in to 99.5 FM, our beloved station, is so important. If you can't afford to pledge right now, just keep listening. But if you can, you're keeping WBAI alive for the whole community. The Viral Underclass: The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. We speak to you in the midst of this monkeypox outbreak, in the midst of a continued COVID pandemic. What could be more important now? As Stephen Thrasher lays out how the viral underclass is produced, we urge you to go to the phone right now and let us know you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes a difference. Please call right now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. And Michael Eric Dyson says, Stephen Thrasher has written the book we urgently need, putting a compelling and human face on the millions of people affected by the coarse viruses like HIV and COVID, taking the human population. He shows us how race, class, gender, and sexuality combine to help some survive in the form and to help some survive pandemics and even profit from them, while others experience pandemic through their bodies in the form of illness, death, death of loved ones, shame, stigma, and financial insecurity. His analysis of the viral underclass should be required reading for everyone concerned with transforming unequal access to health care in a world where pandemic heightens the brutality of inequality. 212-209-2950. Those are the words of Michael Eric Dyson responding to Stephen Thrasher's first book. We urge you to call. That number again is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please call. Please let us know that you're standing up for independent media. Please let us know that WBAI matters to you. Please call right now. Please let us know that WBAI makes a difference in your life. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We cannot do this without you. It is as simple as that, only with you. 212-209-2950. We don't have much time. Please call. Get a copy of Stephen Thrasher's book. There are limited books, so call in right now. And you're supporting WBAI at the same time. Maybe you live in Wyandanche, or perhaps you live in Freeport, or maybe you live in Great Neck or Little Neck. Would you stick your neck out for WBAI? Maybe you live in Stony Brook or Stony Point or Port Jeff, or go to State University of New York, Old Westbury, State University of New York at Stony Brook. Maybe you live in Westchester. Maybe you live in White Plains. We're urging you to call in and let us know that WBAI matters. Blue Point, we need you. Maybe you live out or like to go to the Hamptons, or you live along the Great South Bay or the Long Island Sound. Call in. Let us know that WBAI makes a difference. Port Jeff or Port Washington, we need you. Oceanside or Ocean Beach, call in right now. Get a copy of Stephen Thrasher's book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. We cannot do this without you, only with you. 212-209-2950. Become a BAI buddy. That's $15 or more a month, but you could pledge $5 or more a month. Or you could pledge $100 and get a copy of Stephen Thrasher's book, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. It is so highly recommended, such an important book. Please call in. Yes, Dr. Thrasher, illuminating truths, all of which implore us to live by the grandest, most liberating of all principles, love. That is Robert Jones, author of The Prophets, what he said about Stephen Thrasher's book. It is a book that will change you, that will move you. Having spent a groundbreaking career studying the racialization, policing, and criminalization of HIV, Dr. Thrasher has come to understand a deeper truth at the heart of our society. There are vast inequalities in who is able to survive viruses and the ways in which viruses spread, kill, and take their toll are much more dependent on social structures than they are on biology alone. Please call. Told through the heartrending stories of friends, of activists and teachers navigating the novel coronavirus, HIV. Now we're dealing with monkeypox. You heard the beginning of this interview. Dr. Thrasher bringing the reader with him as he delves into the viral underclass and lays bare its inner workings. In the tradition of Isabel Wilkerson's caste and Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, the viral underclass helps us understand the world more deeply by showing the fraught relationship between privilege and survival. And also what is so special about this book. Please call. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes the difference. That number again, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We cannot do this work without you, only with you. Let us know that Democracy Now! Matters in your life. 212-209-2950, or go to WBAI.org. Please call in. Please let us know that Democracy Now! Matters in your life. We can't do this without you. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please call. Please let us know that Democracy Now! Matters to you, that Democracy Now! Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 every weekday morning, daily, grassroots, global, unembedded, independent, international, investigative news hour. Please make your call, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. If you appreciate Democracy Now! Bringing you the highlights of the January 6 hearings. You know, I talked about our sister station in Houston being blown up by the Ku Klux Klan when it first went on the air in 1970, KPFT. And then when they got back on their feet, the Klan blew them up again. And I can't remember, it was the Exalted Cyclops or the Grand Dragon. I often confuse their titles, but he said it was his proudest act because he understood how dangerous Pacifica is. Dangerous because it allows people to speak for themselves. And when you hear someone speaking from their own experience, whether it's someone with monkeypox or HIV or COVID, someone in Nigeria, in New York City, in Venezuela, or in Spain, it breaks down stereotypes and caricatures that fuel the hate groups. Please call and support independent, corporate-free, people-powered radio. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, or or simply make your pledge online. You can get the book right there, The Viral Underclass by Stephen W. Thrasher. Yes, the subtitle is The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. We cannot do this work without you folks. Only together, only with you. Your call makes the difference. You make WBAI happen. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Please call. Please fill these phone lines. Please let us know you're in the house. Please let us know that Democracy Now! Makes a difference to you. Make it now. Make WBAI possible. If there's someone who could afford a $1,000 contribution, tax-deductible, charitable contribution to WBAI, Pacifica is a nonprofit. Your money goes to WBAI Radio right here in the metro area. And if you're listening online, we're just simply WBAI.org. You could be listening from anywhere, from China, from Ukraine, from Russia. You could be listening from Nigeria, from South Africa, from Kenya. You could be listening from Spain, France, Britain. You could be listening from right here in the United States or in Canada, Latin America. We urge you to make the call. If you're listening from the Caribbean, go right there to WBAI.org. Or maybe you're from the Caribbean, but you live here and you're listening right in the greater metro area. Call 212-209-2950. You can call that from anywhere, but call it now. 212-209-2950. Your call makes a difference. You make WBAI happen. 212-209-2950. We cannot do this without you. It's our last minute, folks. Get Stephen Thrasher's book. It's brand new, hot off the press, hardcover book, The Viral Underclass. Books still matter. I still love them. I know you do too. 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org. Stephen Thrasher is remarkable. Inaugural chair at Northwestern University's Medill School, the first journalism professorship in the world created to focus on LGBTQ research. Faculty member at Northwestern University's Institute for Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-Being. His writings have been printed so many places. Just wrote the latest piece about monkeypox. We are talking about a monkeypox outbreak in this country. We urge you to call right now. We cannot do this without you. But then we have to look at this country and the world. And once again, the disparity around who gets